to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
வக்ரதுண்ட மகாகாய சூர்யகோடி சமப்ரபா நிர்விக்னம் குரு மே தேவ சர்வகாரியேஷு சர்வதா சிவசக்த்யா யுக்தோ யதி பவதி சக்தஹ ப்ரபவிதும் நச்சே தேவம் தேவோ நகலு குஷலஹ ஸ்பந்திதுமபி அதஸ்த்வாமாராத்யா ஹரிஹர விரிஞ்சாதிபிரபி ப்ரணந்தும் ஸ்தோதும் வா கதமக்ருத புண்யஹ ப்ரபவதி.
Om Shri Sai Ram, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan, Shri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning, greetings and loving Sai Ram from Prashanthi Nilayam. And you're with me, Team Radio Sai, Sunil, welcoming you to this morning's segment, Divine Glory on Radio Sai. Today is the 24th of October 2019, and let me read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. Most of us believe we are humble and don't have ego. Is that always consistent? Bhagwan lovingly describes a beautiful divine drama from Krishnavatara and reminds us to introspect today, and I quote, "Once Krishna pretended to suffer from an unbearable headache. With warm clothes wound around his head and red eyes, he rolled restlessly in bed. Queens Rukmini and Satyabhama tried many remedies that proved ineffective. Along with Narada, when they consulted Lord Krishna, he directed to bring the dust of the feet of a true devotee. In a trice, Narada manifested himself in the presence of some celebrated devotees, but they were too humble to offer dust of their feet to be used for their Lord as a drug. Narada returned disappointed. Krishna asked, 'Did you ask gopis?' Narada hurried with disbelief. When the gopis heard this, without a second thought, they shook the dust off their feet and filled his hands. Even before Narada reached Dwaraka, Krishna's headache had disappeared. The Lord enacted this five-day drama to teach that self-condemnation is also egoism, and when ego goes, you feel neither superior nor inferior, and a devotee must obey the Lord's command without Dima," unquote. This was taken from a divine discourse delivered by Bhagwan on July 7th, 1963. Dear listener, today in Divine Glory I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book Sri Sai Satcharitra, written by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by a conversation with late Mrs. Jayalakshmi Gopinath. In conversation with her is Dr. Rajeshwari Patel. First, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemad Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book, and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. And here it is for your listening pleasure.
Baba said that he was omnipresent, transcending land, air, world, light and heaven, and that he was not localized. To remove the misunderstanding of those who thought that Baba was his only body, 3 cubits and a half in length, he incarnated himself in this form. And if any devotee meditated upon him day and night with complete self-surrender, he experienced complete union with him like sweetness and sugar, waves and sea, eye and its sight. He who wants to get rid of the cycle of births and deaths should lead a righteous life with his mind calm and composed. He should not speak harshly to anyone so as to hurt him. He should always engage himself in good actions, should do his duties and surrender himself, heart and soul, to the Lord. He need not then be afraid of anything. He who trusts him entirely, hears and expounds his leelas and does not think of anything else, is sure to attain self-realization. Baba asked many to remember his name and to surrender to him, but to those who wanted to know who they were, he advised Shravan and Manan. To some he advised remembering God's name, to others hearing his leelas, to some worship of his feet, to others reading and studying Adhyatma Ramayana, Dhyaneshwari and other sacred scriptures. He made some sit near his feet, some he sent to Khandoba's temple, and the others he advised the repetition of the 1,000 names of Vishnu, and to some the study of Chandogya Upanishad and Gita. There was neither any limit nor any restriction to his instructions. He gave in person or by vision and dreams. To someone addicted to drink, he appeared in his dream, sat on his chest, pressed it, and left him after he gave a promise not to touch liquor anymore. To some he explained some mantras like Gurur Brahma in dreams. To some devotee who was practicing Hatha Yoga, he sent word that he should leave off Hatha Yoga practices, sit quiet and wait. It is impossible to describe all his ways and methods. In ordinary worldly dealings, he set examples by his actions, one of which is given below. Remuneration for labor. One day at noon, Baba came near Radha Krishnamai's house and said, "Bring me a ladder." Some men brought it and set it against the wall of a house as directed by Baba. He climbed up on the roof of the Viman Gondkar house and passed over the roof of Radha Krishnamai's home and then got down from the other corner. What object Baba had, none could know. Radha Krishnamai was at that time shivering with malaria. It may be to drive off the fever that he may have gone up there. Immediately after getting down, Baba paid 2 rupees to the persons who brought the ladder. Somebody asked Baba why he paid so much for this. He replied, "Nobody should take the labor of others in vain. The worker should be paid his dues promptly and liberally. If the philosophy taught by Baba be followed, that is, if the remuneration for labor be paid promptly and satisfactorily, the laborers will turn out better, and both the laborers and the employers will be profited, and there will be no room for lockouts and strikes, no ill feeling between labor and the capital." Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 20. Dasganu's problem solved by Kaka's maidservant. In this chapter, Hemad Pant describes how Dasganu's problem was solved by Kaka Sahib Dikshit's maidservant. Preliminary. God was originally formless. He assumed a form for the sake of bhaktas. With the help of Maya, he played the part of an actor in the big drama of the universe. Let us remember and visualize Sri Sai. Let us go to Shirdi and see carefully the program after the noon aarti. After the aarti ceremony was over, Sai used to come out of the masjid and, standing on its edge, distribute udi to the devotees with very kind, gracious and loving looks. The bhaktas also got up with equal fervor clasped his feet and had the bliss of Udi. Baba passed handfuls of Udi into the palms of the devotees and marked their foreheads with Udi with his own hands. The love he bore for them in his heart was boundless. Then he addressed the bhaktas, "O Bhav, go home to take your lunch. You, Anna, go to your lodgings. You, Bapu, enjoy your meal." In this way, he accosted each and every devotee and sent them home. Even now, you can have the pleasure of these sights if you bring into play your imagination. Now bringing Sai in our mental vision, let us meditate on him. From his feet upwards to his face, prostrating before him humbly, lovingly and reverentially. Isha Upanishad. Das Ganu once started to write a Marathi commentary on the Isha Upanishad. Let us first give a brief idea of this Upanishad before proceeding further. It is called Mantra Upanishad as it is embodied in the mantras of the Vedic Sanhita. It constitutes the last or the 40th chapter of the Vajrasanayi Sanhita and is therefore called Vajrasanayi Sanhitopanishad. Being embodied in the Vedic Sanhitas, this is regarded as superior to all other Upanishads, which are in the Brahmanyakas and Aranyakas. Not only this, other Upanishads are considered to be commentaries on the truths mentioned briefly in the Isha Upanishad. For instance, the biggest of the Upanishads, the Brihadaranyak Upanishad, is considered by Pandit Satavalekar to be a running commentary on the Isha Upanishad. Professor Ranade says, "The Isha Upanishad is quite a small Upanishad and yet it contains many hints which show an extraordinary piercing insight. Within the short compass of 18 verses, it gives a valuable mystical description of the Atma, a description of the ideal sage who stands unruffled in the midst of temptations and sorrows. The most valuable idea that lies at the root of the Upanishad is that of a logical synthesis between the two opposites of knowledge and works, which are both required, according to the Upanishad, to be annulled in a higher synthesis." In another place he says, "The poetry of the Isha Upanishad is a co-mixture of moral, mystical and metaphysical knowledge." From the brief description given above about this Upanishad, one can see how difficult it is to translate this Upanishad in a vernacular language and bring out its exact meaning. Das Ganu translated it in Marathi Ovi Meter, verse by verse. But as he did not comprehend the gist or essence of the Upanishad, he was not satisfied with his performance. On being dissatisfied, he consulted some learned men regarding his doubts and difficulties and discussed it with them at great length. They did not solve them, nor did they give him any rational and satisfactory explanation. So Das Ganu was a little restless over this matter. Sadguru only competent and qualified to explain. As we have seen, this Upanishad is a quintessence of the Vedas. It is the science of self-realization. It is the scythe or weapon which can rend asunder the bondage of life and death and make us free. Therefore, he thought that he who himself has attained self-realization can only give him the true or correct interpretation of the Upanishad. When nobody could satisfy Das Ganu, he resolved to consult Sai Baba about this. When he got the opportunity to go to Shirdi, he saw Sai Baba, prostrated himself before him and mentioned his difficulties about the Isha Upanishad and requested him to give the correct solution. Sai Baba blessed him and said, "You need not be anxious. There is no difficulty about the matter. The maidservant of Kaka Sahib Dikshit will solve your doubts at Viliparla on your way to home." The people who were present there and heard this thought that Baba was joking and said, "How could an illiterate maidservant solve the difficulties of this mystic nature?" But Das Ganu thought otherwise. He was sure that whatever Baba spoke must come true, as Baba's word was a decree of the Brahma. Kaka's maidservant. Fully believing Baba's words, Das Ganu left Shirdi and came to Viliparla and stayed with Kaka Sahib Dikshit. There, The next day, when Dasganu was enjoying his morning nap, he heard a poor girl singing a beautiful song in clear and melodious tone. The theme of the song was a crimson-colored sari. How nice it was, how fine was its embroidery, how beautiful were its border. He liked the song so much that he came out and saw it was being sung by a young girl, the sister of Namya, who was a servant of Kaka Sahib. The girl was cleaning vessels and had only a torn rag on her person. On seeing her impoverished condition and a happy temperament, Dasganu felt pity for her. And when Rao Bahadur M.V. Pradhan gave him a pair of dhotars the next day, he requested him to give a sari to the poor little girl too. Rao Bahadur bought a good small sari and presented it to her. Like a starved person getting delicious dishes to eat, her joy knew no bounds. Next day, she wore the new sari and out of great joy and merriment, whirled and danced around and played fugadi with other girls. The day following, she kept the new sari in her box at home and came back with the old and torn rags. But she looked as merry as she was the previous day. On seeing this, Dasganu's pity transformed into admiration. He thought the girl, being poor, had to wear a torn rag, but now she had a new sari which she kept in reserve, and putting on the old rag, strutted herself, showing no trace of sorrow or dejection. He realized that all our feelings of pain and pleasure depend upon the attitude of our mind. On thinking deeply over this incident, he realized a man ought to enjoy whatever God has given him, in the firm conviction that He besets everything from behind and before and on all sides, and that whatever is bestowed on him by God must be for the good. In this particular case, the impoverished condition of the poor girl, her torn rag and the new sari, the donor, the doni and the deal were all parts of the Lord and pervaded by him. Here Dasganu got a practical demonstration of the lesson of the Upanishad, the lesson of contentment with one's own lot, with the belief that whatever happens is ordained by God and is ultimately good for us. Unique method of teaching. From the above incident, the reader will see that Baba's method was unique and varied. Though Baba never left Shirdi, he sent some to Machindragarh, some to Kolhapur or Solapur, for practicing sadhanas. To some he appeared in his usual form, to some he appeared in waking or dreaming states day or night and satisfied their desires. It is impossible to describe all the methods that Baba used in imparting instructions to his bhaktas. In this particular case, he sent Dasganu to Viliparla, where he got his problem solved through the maidservant. To those who say it was not necessary to send away Dasganu and that Baba could have personally taught him, we say that Baba followed the right or best course. Or, how else could Dasganu learn a great lesson? Now we close the chapter with another beautiful extract about this Upanishad. The ethics of the Isha. One of the main features of the Isha Upanishad is the ethical advice it offers. And it is interesting to note that the ethics of the Upanishad are definitely based upon the metaphysical position given in it. The very opening words of the Upanishad tell us that God pervades everything. As a corollary, from this metaphysical position, the ethical advice it offers is that a man ought to enjoy whatever God bestows on him in the firm belief that as he pervades everything, whatever is given to him by God must be good. It follows naturally that the Upanishad should forbid us from coveting another man's property. In fact, we are fittingly taught here a lesson of contentment with one's own lot, in the belief that whatever happens is divinely ordained and hence it is good for us. Another moral advice is that man must spend his lifetime always in doing action, specifically the karmas enjoined in the Shastras, with resignation to his will. Inactivity, according to the Upanishad, would be the canker of the soul. It is only when a man spends his lifetime in doing actions in this manner that he can hope to attain the ideal of nishkarma. Finally, the text goes on to say that a man who sees all beings in the self and sees the self as existing in all beings, for whom all beings and everything that exists have become the self. How can such a man suffer for infatuation? What ground would such a man have for grief? Loathfulness, infatuation and grief verily proceed from a not being able to see the Atma in all things. But a man who realizes the oneness of all things, for whom everything has become the self, must cease to be affected by the common foibles of humanity. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 21. Stories of B.H. Thakur, Anantrao Pathankar and Pandharpur Pleader. In this chapter, Hemad Pant relates the stories of Vinayak Harishchandra Thakur, Anantrao Pathankar of Pune and a pleader from Pandharpur. All these stories are very interesting, which, if very carefully read and grasped, will lead the readers on to the spiritual path. Preliminary. It is a general rule that it is our good luck in the form of accumulation of merits of past births that enables us to seek the company of saints and benefit thereby. As an illustration of this rule, Hemad Pant gives his own instance. He was a resident magistrate of Bandra, a suburb of Mumbai, for many years. A famous Muslim saint named Peer Maulana was living there, and many Hindus, Parsis and others who followed different religion used to go to him and take his darshan. His mujawar, by name Yunus, pressed Hemad Pant many a time for going to see him, but for some or the other reason he was not able to do that. After many years his turn came and he was called to Shirdi, where he was permanently enrolled in Sai Baba's darbar. Unfortunate fellows do not get such contact of the saints. It is only the fortunate ones that get it. Institution of saints. There have been institutions of saints in this world from time immemorial. Various saints appear themselves in various places to carry out missions allotted to them. But though they work in different places, they are, as it were, one. They work in unison under the common authority of the Almighty Lord, and knows fully well what each of them is doing in his place, and supplement his work where necessary. An instance illustrating this is given below. Mr. Thakur. Mr. B.H. Thakur was a clerk in the revenue department, and he once came to a town named Vadgaon near Belgaon. There he saw a canary saint Appa and bowed before him. The saint was explaining portion from the book Bichar Sagar of Nischal Das. When Thakur was taking his leave to go, he said to him, "You should study this book, and if you do so, your desires will be fulfilled. And when you go to the north in the discharge of your duties in the future, you will come across a great saint by your fortune, and then he will show you the future path and give rest to your mind and make you happy." Then he was transferred to Junnar, where he had to go by crossing Nane Ghat. This ghat was very steep and difficult, and no other conveyance other than a buffalo was of use in crossing it. So he had to take a buffalo ride through the ghat, which was much inconvenient to him. Then he was transferred on promotion to Kalyan, and there he got acquainted with Nana Sahib Chandurkar. He heard much about Sai Baba from him and wished to see him. Next day, Nana Sahib had to go to Shirdi and he asked Thakur to accompany him. He could not do so as he had to attend the Thana civil court for a civil case. So Nana Sahib went alone. Thakur went to Thana, but there the case was postponed. Then he repented for not accompanying Nana Sahib. Still he left for Shirdi, and when he reached there, he found that Nana Sahib had left the place the previous day. Some of his other friends whom he met there took him to Baba. He saw Baba, fell at his feet and was overjoyed. His eyes were full of tears and his hair stood on end. Then after a while, the omniscient Baba said to him, "The path of this place is not so easy as the teachings of the canary saint Appa, or even as a buffalo ride in the Nane Ghat. In this spiritual path, You have to put in your best exertion. It is very difficult. When Thakur heard these significant words, which only he knew, he was overwhelmed with joy. He came to know that the word of the canary saint had turned true. Then, joining both hands and placing his head on Baba's feet, he prayed that he should be accepted and blessed. Then Baba said, "What Appa told you was all right, but these things have to be practiced and lived. Mere reading won't do. You have to think and carry out what you read, otherwise it's no use. Mere book learning without the grace of the Guru and self-realization is of no avail." The theoretical portion was read from the work Vichar Sagar by Thakur, but the practical way was shown to him at Shirdi. Another story given below will bring out the truth more forcibly. Anantrao Patankar. One gentleman from Pune by name Anantrao Patankar wished to see Baba. He came to Shirdi and took Baba's darshan. His eyes were satisfied and he was much pleased. He fell at Baba's feet and after performing proper worship said to Baba, "I have read a lot, studied Vedas, Vedanta and Upanishad, and heard all the Puranas, yet I have not got any peace of mind. So I think all my reading was useless. Simple, ignorant, devout persons are better than myself. Unless the mind becomes calm, all book learnings is of no avail. I have heard from many people that you easily give peace of mind to the many people by your mere glance and potent word, and so I have come here. Please take pity on me and bless me." Then Baba told him a parable, which was as follows. Parable of 9 balls of stool. Navaveda Bhakti. Once a merchant came here. Before him a mare passed her stool. The merchant, intent on his quest, spread the end of his dhotar and gathered all the 9 balls in it, and thus he got concentration, peace of mind. Mr. Patankar could not make out the meaning of the story. So he asked Ganesh Damodar, alias Dada Kelkar, "What does Baba mean by this?" Dada replied, "I too do not know all that Baba says and means. But at his inspiration I say what I come to know. The mare is God's grace, and the 9 balls excreted are the 9 forms or types of bhakti: Shravan, Kirtan, Smaran, Padasevan, Archan, Namaskar, Dasya, Sakhyam, Atmanivedan. These are the 9 types of bhakti. If any of these is faithfully followed, Lord Hari will be pleased and manifest himself in the home of the devotee. All the sadhanas, namely japa, tapa, yoga practice and studying the scriptures and expounding them, are quite useless unless they are accompanied by bhakti. Knowledge of the Vedas or fame as a great dhyani and mere formal bhajan are of no avail. What is wanted is full devotion. Consider yourself as the merchant or seeker after the truth, and be anxious and eager like him to collect or cultivate the 9 types of devotion. Then you will attain stability and peace of mind." Next day, when Patankar went to Baba for salutation, he was asked whether he collected the 9 balls of stool. Then he said that he, being a poor fellow, should first be graced by Baba and he would be enabled to collect them. Baba blessed and comforted him, saying that he would attain peace and welfare. After hearing this, Patankar became overjoyed and happy.
Guru Var ki Paramanand Sadara.
Sight.
Spend the day with Sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Welcome to Radio Sai Global Harmony. Professor Jayalakshmi Gopinath, ma'am, it is a pleasure to have you here with us. In the Hindu spiritual tradition, among the 9 modes of devotion, one is Shravana, or listening to the glory of God. You, ma'am, have had a long association of almost 55 years with Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba. So our listeners who have tuned into Radio Sai today are in for a spiritual treat. Professor Jayalakshmi Gopinath is principal, warden and head of the Department of English, Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Anantapur campus. But more importantly, she is perhaps one of the oldest devotees of Bhagwan. Ma'am, as you take a walk down memory lane, we would like you to open your golden casket of treasured experiences. Please tell our listeners a little first of your early life. How old were you when you came to Bhagwan? And how old was Bhagwan, physically I mean, when you came to him?
Thank you, Rajeshwari, for all that you've said. I was in my early teens when I came to the lotus feet. And it was, I suppose, late 1947. So we can gauge the age of Bhagwan. It was about 21 years, I think.
Yes.
Bhagwan should have been that.
Okay. Your tryst with God, did you sense it coming or did it happen unexpectedly? What brought you to Bhagwan?
Well, I cannot call it mere chance. It must have been divine design. When Father had come preparatory to retirement to settle down in Bangalore, I was still studying, so I was with my parents. My father would go every day on walks, and there he met a person one day who told him about Bhagwan Baba and that he was residing in the house of Srimati Sakamma, the coffee magnate. Father himself, well, I suppose so, had certain occult powers. He could hypnotize, he could cure certain diseases, and it was ours was a very pious family. So Father got interested, and then he said, well, let me know where he lives, give the address, we would like to go. That's how Father, Mother and I went to Srimati Sakama's house for the first time.
Did you feel at any time during your early childhood a kind of a seeking for God, which you think brought you to Bhagwan?
Yes, yes. Well, it might seem very funny. As a little child, I had an idol of Sri Krishna, of clay. Somehow I would fondle it, I would take it to my bed, even when I slept. And Mother, I suppose, didn't say anything. She sort of indulged me. And for a long time, that attachment to Krishna and the idol was there. Apart from that, our family itself was so very devoted, and they hosted the sadhus and sons in our house. So I suppose that must have affected me.
All these things together.
Yes, yes. Yes. To love God.
Yes. It fostered.
Yes.
Kind of.
To merely love Him.
Yes.
Not ask Him for this or that.
Yes.
And that is how when we saw Bhagwan Baba, well, I don't know, child. There was something that happened to me. It was totally subjective. A tremendous ecstasy. And my eyes filled with tears. Baba was very fragile at that time.
An instant recognition at that time?
Because, well, I did feel
felt the experience of ecstasy immediately,
yes,
on seeing him.
Immediately as I saw him. And when he looked at me, in that he threw a rose at me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was enough, you see. And he was very kind to my father, he took him aside and spoke to him. And I suppose that day sealed the bond between divinity and us. And throughout it has been that.
You must have visited Prashanthi Nilayam in the 50s and 60s several times.
Well,
what was Puttaparthi like in those days, ma'am?
Well, we were there during even the old Mandir times.
So what was it like, Puttaparthi?
Oh, the old Mandir then was a very, very small building of rough stone.
Mm-hmm.
And Bhagwan's residence itself was none too unenviable.
Okay.
And it was all wilderness, all around. And what Prashanthi Nilayam is today, you cannot imagine what it was in those days.
What was Bhagwan's daily routine like in that glorious past?
In the old Mandir.
Because you have been a direct witness to it.
Yes. In the old Mandir, there wasn't anything like direct routine. Baba is always many-faceted and every day it's novel.
Mm.
And early morning, of course, then at that time we didn't have Suprabhatam. Although we were just a handful of devotees, a very small place, the old Mandir. And as usual, the discipline, the men aside and the women aside, that is it. They would not
on
come
either side, yes.
Yes, they would not come together that way. And early morning, as soon as we got up, well, I can't describe to you where most of us, when we were in a state of heightened bliss, which perhaps the Bhagavata, you see, relates about Sri Krishna and his devotees. I don't know. And it was so with me. And Baba would be up early.
And around what time?
Well, we would all be... We
what
would
what
get
time would you have? I mean, you didn't five? Have a regular
yes,
routine
around 5
for darshan.
Would be up.
Oh.
And Baba would be there. No such thing like darshan.
Okay.
He would be out of his room. The room...
So everybody just spent time with Swami all
yes,
throughout the day.
He would be moving amidst us.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd all be standing. Standing and just looking at him enraptured.
Oh, yes.
That's what it was. And then he would play with us. And bhajan time he would sing with us. Many a time Bhagavan has sung along with me
mm-hmm.
during bhajan times then. And the altar, of course, was on the platform. And one, any devotee could go clean it up and keep it in shape. And one little experience I can tell you of those days.
Yes.
We had come after we went to Srimati Sakama's house many a time for darshan. Bhajans would be held there. Baba told my father, come to Puttaparthi. It was not Prashanthi Nilayam then.
At that time, yes.
Puttaparthi. So once during my holidays, we thought we'd make the first trip. And the three of us went. In those days, Bhagavan would be standing right at the portico of the Mandir to receive every devotee.
Each and every person.
Each and every
whatever
devotee.
Time they came.
Whatever time. And then he received us. We were so happy. This experience of mine...
Was that your first visit, ma'am?
At the very first visit. And we didn't know that at that time, Baba would give interview to devotees. We were not aware of it. So it was time for us to leave after a few days. And I didn't know. At that time, sort of I was motivated to clean the altar and then put the wicks in order and then cut it. And then if the oil wasn't there, to pour it. And if I could confess, there was a curtain, you see, which was covering the altar from the rest of the place. And nobody could see.
Mm-hmm.
I would go and hug Shirdi Baba's idol. This is a secret. And I would feel so happy. And that day I didn't know my parent, father and mother had been called for an interview. I didn't know that. Then I was cleaning
the
altar.
So you were oblivious of other things, what was happening in front of the curtain.
I didn't know, Rajeshwari, this was the thing. And as I was cleaning, some devotee came and said, because Baba calls me Jayama, that is not actually the way I was called by my parents.
But that's how he fondly refers to you always.
Yes. And they said, what is it? Your parents have gone for and didn't you go? I said, I don't know. By which time the door had been latched from inside. So something terrible sadness overcame me. I sat in a corner and I was sobbing my heart out. After a little time, I heard my father calling out to me, Jaya, Jaya, come, come, it's late. Come, let's go. Then I said, I shouldn't go out with a tear-stained face. I just lifted my hot tear-stained face. The tears were just trickling down. And whom do I see in front of me? Bhagavan Baba. And he said, why are you crying? He said it so tenderly that afresh, the tears just came profusely. Then, what do you want? He asked me. At that time, you know, I needed nothing. I said, Swami, I want your photo. I'd speak to him in Kannada then. Then he looked at me with such tenderness and then he said, you want a photo? If you put the photo in water, it gets dissolved. If you throw it into fire, it gets burned to ashes. If you tear it, it becomes fragments. Why do you want to have a photo? Keep me in your heart. Young as I was thrilled.
Yes.
And of course, afterwards, he materialized a small photograph and gave it to me. It is with me even today.
So that was your small private interview.
The very first gift that Baba gave me. And that was the first one.
Ma'am, a wonderful message. What are your feelings about what Bhagwan was then and what he is now, outwardly at least?
He is the unchangeable one. It is just circumstances have changed.
Yes.
And the devotees now are coming in
huge
great numbers.
Yes.
And there are so many things that Baba has taken upon himself. There in the old mandir, it was entirely a personal contact between God
and his
and the devotee. It was just a state of absolute enchantment. That's what I could call it. And another thing which comes to my mind, we used to come to Puttaparthi. My mother had left for Delhi because my second sister was about to deliver. Father and I were at home. Father, you see, he also became crazy about Bhagavan. So one day he said, let us go to Puttaparthi. Oh, I was overjoyed. And then we came.
Where were you when you came to Puttaparthi? You were in Bangalore then?
I was in Bangalore. And we alighted. Again, Baba was at the portico. He took us inside. And there in front of the altar, Baba just stopped. So naturally, Father also stopped. I also stood there. Baba looked at me and said, sing. I used to be nervous to sing. So I didn't know. But Baba encouraged me and said, sing. And he liked certain songs which I was singing. So I started one song, and as I was singing, I was amazed, and there are few persons who had collected there, they were amazed to see that the garlands which were put on Shirdi Baba and our Baba, the life-size photographs.
Sati Baba.
Yes. They had garlands right from the top to the toe. First, Shirdi Baba's garlands started to sway, then it gained momentum. It swayed and swayed and swayed so forcibly that all the garlands snapped and fell down.
So this is while you were singing?
While I was singing. And my hair stood on ends. Baba looked at me very meaningfully. And then he said, sing another song. So now, of course,
Which was the song, ma'am, which you sang?
He liked Purandaradas's kirtans and Mirabai's.
So that's what you were
singing?
He
would ask me to sing, and this was Mirabai's. And another song, he said, I started. And the garland on our Baba's picture, the same thing was repeated, swaying, swaying, and then gaining momentum. It snapped and fell down. Baba looked at me again very meaningfully. Then I wanted to stop. He said, sing. I sang a third song, and the garlands around the silver idol of Shirdi Baba, slowly they rolled down.
So it didn't snap this time?
No.
It just rolled down?
Just rolled down. And I suppose that was the end of that particular experience. And I knew Baba was very happy. And of course, as far as I was concerned, I was in the heaven of my delight.
Ma'am, by the way, I remember you telling us that you won the first prize in a music competition organized by Bhagwan in the old mandir. Tell us about it.
This was, you know, something impromptu. It came all of a sudden. Parents were to follow. I came first with some devotees. And right as I alighted, they told me a music competition is being conducted by Bhagavan Baba. Well, I thought it's all right. Then immediately one person came running to me and said, Swami is calling you. Mm-hmm. I'm always very nervous to sing in the presence of Bhagavan. I felt a sort of a quiver. Then as soon as he saw, the mandir was not like this then. It was a little different. It was not so polished. There weren't these embellishments.
So this is not in the old mandir?
No, this is in the new mandir.
Okay.
New mandir. Of course, the altar had the life-size pictures of Bhagavan. And there now, where is the chariot? There Bhagavan was sitting as a judge. And men and women, or boys and girls, whom he had asked to sing, had to go there, sit there, and sing through the mic. So after some had sung, both men and women, he called me. I was always quick when Baba called me to sing. Then he said, sit down, sing. And he named the songs.
Which were the songs?
This was again Meera Bachchan's. I sang the song. And then there were a few more participants. At the end of it all, well, I never expected. Baba announced that I had got the first prize. And even today I have it with me. It's a lovely silver cup and saucer, which is tinted with gold inside. And then when he gave it to me, he told me, Jayamma, drink milk out of this.
Ma'am, what did Bhagwan say to you all in those days about his life and mission? Did he say anything at that time?
Well, sometimes, yes, occasionally. If the circumstances sort of motivated Bhagwan to say these things.
So he did speak about his life.
Especially, I have seen his grandfather. I think then he must have been about 105 years old.
When you saw him?
I've seen him. He used to come there occasionally to the old mandir. Then the new mandir wasn't there. Gaunt, very tall, gaunt. He had a personality of his own, even at that age, as if he's one of the chief persons in the village. Oh, it was a beautiful thing. He would come with a stick and somebody would help him and they would put a chair in the outside enclosed, that longish type of enclosure where the altar was. And he would sit down waiting for his divine grandson. Swami would come so quickly from his room as he was rushing forth to meet this human grandfather. And he would go to him, clasp his hands, and I've seen that grandfather literally hugging him.
Oh, really?
It's a wonderful sight.
Bhagwan has said in, in some private discourses that his grandfather was the only person who really recognized his divinity.
Yes, that's what is said.
Yes.
And we could see this interaction that definitely was a divine bondage between the grandfather and the grandson. And in those days we used to have, even, you know, during Dasaras and Swami's birthday, procession of Swami in a flower-bedecked palanquin. We used to have that. And those days, Swami has given darshan of the avatars to so many devotees. Well, we ourselves have seen once, when the palanquin, you see, the people carried Swami, the devotees, and then the procession came back to the mandir, old mandir. And they kept the palanquin down, and Baba got off the palanquin, just shook his robe. I was a witness to it.
This was
just, was in the old mandir.
Old mandir.
And from his robe, just vibhuti, just fell off. In flakes, to such a distance it spread that people started gathering it. And right on his forehead, there would be thick flakes of vibhuti then, if he came back from the procession. And he would just do this, and it would fall. And he would take the flowers, so many of these petals of these flowers, he would take it in both his hands and just throw
them.
They would get transformed into medallions. And my mother got one such medallion, very significant. My father's name was Keshav Vittal. He was called Vittal Rao. On one side is Bhagavan Baba. on the other side is Panduranga Vittal.
Okay. So then each medallion had a different deity on it?
Different deities. Oh. Different deities.
Ma'am, tell us one of your most precious experiences that speaks of Bhagwan's glory. Any one of the really precious
ones. There are quite
ones.
A few, Rajeshwari, I can just mention two. Sakamma, she was very devoted to Swami. She looked after Swami like her own son. He also loved her. Pure soul. But somehow it happened, we do not know divine destiny or our own karmas come in the way. When Baba went to Madras to a devotee's house, where the wife was a great devotee, she was in trouble. At that time, of course, my father also was there, and Nagamani Amma of those days.
Yes.
She was a great devotee. And there was one Thiruvengadam Shetty, and there was Sakamma, and there was this gentleman, one Niladri Rao, in whose house Baba was residing then.
When he went there.
Of course, we did not seek out for the reason. We are all ignorant human beings. We are all vulnerable.
Yes.
And this Niladri Rao, the Sakamma and Thiruvengadam Shetty, somehow, I don't know what happened, they separated from the fold, Sai fold.
Including Sakamma.
Yes. She was a long-standing devotee. The ones who stuck at that time were my father and Nagamani Amma. Well, all this was over.
Mm-hmm.
When Nagamani Amma was still, of course, she always loved him. Even in the end, she came to me, came to Swami afterwards. Sakamma was, she had a lot of faith in my father. So she used to tell him, this mandir, small mandir, old mandir, poor Swami, so cramped up. You know, it was a crude stone building. Baba's room was so small, he didn't even have interconnection between his living room and the bathroom. No privacy for Baba. Mm-hmm. Even when he went from his room to the bathroom, he'll all be standing there.
Ooh.
It was a sad thing. So she said, why not we put in effort, collect some contribution, and build a good spacious mandir for Bhagwan. That is how it started.
So at that time she was still in yes. Swami's fold.
Yes. That's how it started. Father took it up. And some people seemed to have contributed. One among them at that time, and he was still a devotee, was the Thiruvengadam Shetty, a very rich person, Vaisya merchant.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was over. I'll cut it short. Then the new mandir was opened in 1950. 1952, my uncle, Dr. Prasanna Simha Rao, who was the chief surgeon in the Victoria Hospital, who had come to Swami when he had paralysis, he was a devotee. He and my aunt, we were all in Bangalore then, father had settled down there after retirement. So they said they would like to have Baba's darshan. My parents, well, at that time they said, well, they could go. And I said, I will go with them. So they took me with them. Oh, this was something. It's made an indelible mark in my mind. I can never forget it. The mandir was plain then, the new mandir. It didn't have all these curves and these embellishments and all that.
Yes.
Baba was standing. It had a portico. And you know the front veranda as it is.
That has remained.
Remained, but it wasn't done up so well. Mm-hmm. It was just cement.
Yes.
And Baba had come down. He was standing in that veranda. He gave an interview to my uncle and aunt. I was standing there. He didn't call me for the interview. Then there were some others. And devotees, you see, they were so happy that the new mandir had come up. So some of them expressed, as Bhagavan is standing as Swami, how beautiful this mandir is. And some devotees, you see, they may cast some aspersions. And they said that this mandir would not come up over 1 foot wall.
Yes.
Yeah, that's such arrogance.
Time.
Yes, they said it's
before the construction.
Yes. And then they said, Swami, how stupid and ignorant they are. What a beautiful mandir has come up. Swami made a wonderful declaration. The whole world should know about it, Rajeshwari. He was standing there. He became very solemn. And sometimes there was such a change between the Baba who would play with us and talk with us and the Baba who became absolutely divinity personified. hand sort of pulled him upself to that majesty. So that look was on Swami, and there was a far-off aloofness in his eyes. And then he said, "Let people talk. They do not know. I just have to clap my hands, and a whole mandir will come up. Everything is in these hands." And that declaration he made so loudly, I suppose it went home to all of us. It sort of, made our hair stand on end. Just imagine. He doesn't need us.
Yes.
We think we are doing. He's getting it done by us to get us that fulfillment. That is all.
Yes, to give us the satisfaction that we have contributed.
Yes. And as he said this, he went on repeating it. "I have everything. Everything is in my hands." And somehow he felt detached from the human beings, those of us who were standing there, and slowly walked off, climbed the steps and went to his room. Yes. This has made a tremendous impression upon me.
It's really a startling
statement.
Isn't
it so?
Yes, ma'am.
That is it.
Once, many years ago, you were asked by Bhagwan to translate for an interview which Bhagwan gave to Mr. Howard Murfitt.
Ah, yes.
After you returned to Anantapur,
yes,
you shared with the students.
Yes.
And I was also a student then, so I remember this. You shared with the students some of the profound truths uttered by Bhagwan during the interview.
Yes.
Do you remember some of them, ma'am?
Oh, yes. That was another incident where the small interview room at that moment lost its contours. And it became something as vast as space because of the things that Swami said and he uttered. Mr. Murfitt asked this question. "Swami, you had incarnated as Shirdi Baba, and now you are the reincarnation of that deity 18 years later. Swami, where were you during the short span of 18 years? "Where was I?"
18 years, ma'am. 8 years.
8 years.
Eight years. Yes.
Then Swami said, "I permeated the whole universe. There is no such single place for me. I was the whole universe." This he uttered again with such solemnity that again I staggered with this answer. And this went on. This was one of the most important things.
Well, did he not just during this interview, but at any other time in your own experience with Swami, ever reveal to you that he is an incarnation of Shirdi Baba?
You mean personally to me?
Or when you were maybe a witness to it? Did he ever say anything?
Well, not personally to me.
Oh.
This, again, I could date it back to about 1954.
Mm-hmm.
In the new mandir.
Yes.
Baba then was not giving public speeches. Small circles he would call and just give them these precious jewels of spiritual truths.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be one among them in the crowd. There was one lady, Rajeshwari, one Brahmin lady. She started to believe in Baba so much, and we could see the transparent love she had for Swami. She was an elderly lady, and her husband was a famous scientist. Then we didn't have rooms in the new mandir also.
Mm-hmm.
So if devotees had to come, they would have to get these tattis, bamboo tattis as we call them. In Telugu they say tadakalu.
Yes, makeshift walls.
Something like that,
A whole sheet.
Pleated bamboo strands made into a sort of a thing,
wall,
As it shall say, a slim wall-like thing.
Yes.
We had to get them, and there would be many people who'd help.
Oh, then you had, you made a...
So sort of a living shelter. And a little bathroom, etc., etc. That's the house the devotees... Because there was nothing whatsoever except the plain mandir. And she also We were also then when she had come. She was a very orthodox Brahmin.
Mm-hmm.
Very orthodox. And people were making fun of her. Because once she would have her bath, go to Chitravati and have her bath, she would come with a wet sari, and she wouldn't come out lest other people touch her, and it contaminates her. And even to her husband, when she had worn this wet sari, and that is the way it was, the ritual, she would make him stand at a distance and keep his foot on the floor. Never give it into his hand. Well, over and above this, she used to cook, and she would be very fond of sending, we used to send in those days, very fond of giving whatever she has cooked to Swami. So Swami used to eat in the left-hand side of Prashanthi Nilayam, not the right hand now, as is his residence.
That
of course, it has changed now. It has gone to the auditorium.
Mm.
Right-hand side, he would reside
of
afterwards.
Of the mandir.
Mandir.
Yes.
And the left-hand side, you see, the middle floor.
There was the dining hall.
Swami's residence. He used to live there. And the dining hall, etc. And only some people who were given permission could take the food up. And there would be his sisters who would serve him. So this lady, she would cook, if I could call it in Kannada terms, muddy.
Mm-hmm.
Muddy, acharam.
Observing the ritual.
Yes, acharam. And with that sari, she would take, and like this, like she would sort of cover if anybody came near her, she would walk up the steps and place it. Swami tantalizingly, he would come near her and said, Chesko, putting out his feet. She would say, Ledu, Swami. She wouldn't touch Swami's feet.
Because of the muddy.
Because of the muddy and the acharam. Swami would laugh and he would indulge her. And people thought how silly she was. Imagine not touching Swami's feet. Could that be greater blasphemy?
Mm-hmm.
But she never bothered. Never bothered. She just observed her rituals most sincerely. So we never expected it one day. It was Ekadashi. And in the morning bhajan, some of us would sit in front. And to my utter discomfiture, Swami would make me sing. And this lady also, that day muddy, Ekadashi. She would not take even a drop of water. She sat apart. And you know what Swami did? These are the things I've learned from divinity, you know. How true he is. Satya, dharma, shanti, prem. He's a very concretization of it. So from childhood, I'm indebted to my parents for having brought me to God. So he came in, Swami came in. He saw this lady sitting a little apart. And then he told the devotees, make place for her.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. See, people were sort of mocking at her.
At her.
And belittling her as being extremely foolish. And what he did, he told them, make way for her. And you know where Swami's throne is? In the bhajan hall?
Yes.
On the lady's side, he asked her to come forward and sit near his throne.
So that's amazing.
And then he told her, Janakamma, on Ekadashi day, her name was Janakamma, on Ekadashi day, in the evenings, what were you doing earlier? Then she said, Swami, on Ekadashi day, she was very simple-hearted. She said, Swami, I would go to the temples and there would be Puranas being told by some pundits and things like that. I would go there, listen to it and come back home. You don't eat anything in Ekadashi? No, Swami. Not even a drop of water? No, Swami. All right. On Ekadashi days you were listening to Purana. I will tell you a Purana today.
Oh.
My God. And then that day you asked me whether he had declared at any other time.
Yes. About Shirdi Baba.
That day, you know what he did? First time he was speaking to a large crowd. A table was brought, a mic was kept. And he said it. He thumped the table. He said, I am the Vedas. It was resonant, echoed throughout the walls of Prashanthi Nilayam. I am the scriptures. I am God. Take this opportunity. If you can understand what I am, well, make best your chances here. Do not carp and criticize and lose this opportunity. But in such a stentorian voice, he said it. Of course, we knew it within ourselves. Baba had not declared it in public. That he thumped the table. I can't forget it even today. I am God himself. That was another declaration.
That is not at all a very common feature at that time.
That was the first time he was speaking to a large crowd.
Yes.
And the first time he was speaking, he made this thumping the table. Now you and I stand on a platform and say, I am the scriptures, I am the Vedas, we'll be pelted with stones.
Yes.
We were all dumbfounded. Yes. Yes. And just, we sat there looking at him, what shall I say, not with full understanding of what he was, but absolutely stupefied at the tremendous divinity that was there in front of us. We couldn't believe.
Did he reveal to you all at that time something about the future, ma'am, at least, about what you're witnessing today unfolding before you?
Yes, yes.
Because I heard that Swami used to tell the old devotees about events that are actually happening today.
Yes, he has told us. Sometimes jocularly, sometimes seriously, he would say, seize this golden opportunity. A time will come when huge crowds will come to Prashanthi Nilayam and you will not have access to me. And still, more and more as time passes, you can only see the heads of humanity. You can hardly see me. You may just be able to see a little of my hair. Swami had such bushy hair then.
Yes.
And then he said, and still time passes on. I may have to fly in the sky to give you all darshan. He has made these statements, open statements.
What are some of your memories of Mother Ishwarama and her relationship with her divine son?
I had a very close relationship with her. She loved me, I don't know what it was. What was the bond between her and me, I do not know. Whenever we would go to Puttaparthi, Swami had given her a room in Prashanthi Nilayam. And she was the one, the only one, not even the father, who could just walk up to Swami's room at any time. He would indulge her. Oh, it was so wonderful to see it. And Swami was always very troublesome.
to the mother.
No, as regards eating. He was such a poor eater. So the sister sometimes, whatever Swami liked, they would cook and bring it from home, from the village.
Mm-hmm.
My God, the way he would dodge them. He would not eat, he would not come and sit at the plate. And then were they to serve, suppose he came and sat for a few seconds, he will eat so little, push this aside, push that aside. And sometimes when the sisters got really tired of coaxing him, they would bring the mother. And then, you see, when the mother came, Swami, tinnu Swami. Hinduku Swami nu tinnu. She would cajole him so sweetly with the love of her mother. And
why are you not eating?
Yes. And then he would eat a little. And he would go on indulging her. He would get lovely saris. And then all of them would be spread in the room. Ra, en kavali ku tisko. Whatever she lacked, she could take.
Mm.
And some jewels also he would get for her. He was very fond. I mean, I do not say in the human way. But divinity, I do not know, maybe. Well, this may not be a proper opinion, was indebted to the mother for giving him this divine body.
Maybe he was also, as he says, My life is my message.
Yes.
He was teaching us to revere our mothers in the same way.
And he revered his father also. The father was a wonderful person. We have known him. Mm-hmm. And of course, he could speak Telugu, no other language. And he had a provision shop. And he would diligently supply the devotees because there were no hotels and things like that at that time. And I think once in one of my talks, my father took to him very much. My father didn't know so much of Telugu, but somehow they could manage. And when we touched his feet once, with such humility, he said, "Why do you touch my feet?" Mm-hmm. And when we said, "You're the father of the avatar," he used to say, "I do not know. He is great. And he is for everybody. He is no more my son." This is the way he would say.
Very simple person.
Very simple.
Ma'am, you must have been present during the anointing ceremony.
Oh, yes. I am anointed, Bhagwan.
Anything connected with that you remember vividly and then related to Mother Isharamma? No?
Yes. You see, on the birthday, it was there even in the old mandir. It was a tradition where some elderly Sumangalis, devotees, they would go, Baba would sort of instruct them, plates of kumkum, haldi, flowers, fruits, and clothes for the parents, and go with a silver container, which we call, perhaps in Kannada, or I don't know, in Telugu also, chumbu, silver chumbu, we say, big one. I suppose that's the name, if I'm not mistaken.
A container, which looks like...
It is made in the traditional way, the thing.
And like a small kalasha.
It's big. It's a big one. Big one. And then they would go, and the mother would draw the water from the well there, and then with the Purna Kumbha, and then, you know, putting those mango leaves and the coconut, it's called a kalasha. The mother and the father, and of course the elder brother was there then, Swami's elder brother. After the mother and the father, the elder brother and his wife, then the sisters, the two sisters. Mm-hmm. At that time, Venkamagaru's husband was alive. I've seen him also. And after that, Janaki Ramaya, who was still a young bachelor at that time. Mm-hmm. This was, you know, the hierarchy or whatever you would call it. They would have to be brought by the devotees with the reverence, with the village band and the Nadaswaram.
To where Swami was sitting?
They would be ushered into... That time there was an auditorium. Of course, I should say it was a very crude form in comparison to this. And they would be ushered in by these lady devotees. First, of course, the Nadaswaram and the band. And the lady devotees who were, bringing plates of all sacred things and holy things, you see, items behind them. Swami's family would come, and Swami would be sitting on the dais. And at that time, all of us could garland him. So all the devotees would be waiting with garlands in their hand. And first, the mother would get onto the steps of the dais, along with the father. There would be one elderly Sumangali holding a silver vessel of oil, which has been boiled with various type of
perfumes.
Herbs. And first the mother, it was a sight to see. Swami would bend down, he said, from the throne, and she would take a flower, dip it in the oil, and thrice she would place it on his head, and it would follow. And in those days, some of the devotees also. So father and mother were called. With lot of trepidity, I was with a longing to do it, but I didn't have the guts to get up the Rai, he said.
He called you anyway.
He called me, and then I've also anointed Bhagwan. It was a wonderful sight. And the devotees, one by one, they would go and garland him. And up to the neck, you know, he'd be garlanded. And each time he would remove the garlands and throw them to a side. That was what it was.
Ma'am, I know from my contact with you that you have a very fine sense of humor. Did you learn it from Bhagwan and Can you tell us of some amusing incident of those early days which demonstrates Bhagwan's love for humor?
My father had a tremendous sense of humor. He has bequeathed it to his children.
So you got it from your father.
But I got it.
Anything relating to Swami's humor, you know? Because Bhagwan also has a very fine...
A tremendous sense of humor. I can tell you
one amusing incident.
Amusing in a sense. Something which happened at home. In those days, in the early days, early 50s, Swami would come and stay with us when he came to Bangalore. We had a cook, a long-standing lady, very good cook. She would cook the food with some other help. Swami, of course, he's with so much of love, whether it was to his taste or not, we didn't know, because we cook Brahmin food. He used to eat it, and she had so much of devotion. And she was a virgin widow. And a Brahmin virgin widow, her sort of situation is something, you see, none too pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in those days, and she was, by the time I think when she came to us, she was about 60 years. And the head would be shaven off.
Yes.
And then she had to wear a red sari among us, the Madhva Brahmins, 9 yards, and no blouse. This is the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women were sort of, I would say, belittled, whatever it is. So, as soon as she saw Swami, I think all the privation she had suffered in her life, humiliation, frustration, just welled out and she sobbed. Swami consoled her. Then, as he would come, you see, say occasionally, he would go to her, he would talk to her and all that. And she would sort of have these dry sobs. Then his humor. Yemi, neerle leni tanko.
Tank without water.
Tank without water because of the dry sobs. Swami's sense of humor.
Just one or two very small questions. After all these years with Bhagwan, supposing you were asked,
yes,
who is Bhagwan Shri Sathya Sai Baba? And what does he mean to you? What would you say?
As a child, being brought up by parents who are pious and religious, we have listened to many of the stories of the gods.
Yes.
And our own mat guru, they would come, we would host them, what we call bhiksha.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do the puja, though it was ritualistic, in a lovely aesthetic way. And this, as from childhood to adolescence, I think, this had seeped into me. And mother would get up early, light the lamp, make the puja ready for father. Father would not sit and do the puja, but whatever had to be done, he would done. But he had a mind and a heart of gold, my father. It's not that I want to talk about my father, but I remember him with so much love and gratitude. What happened was, it had perhaps got registered in our minds that God is a supreme one and everything goes on according to his will. Then the question arises when we came to Sai Baba.
Hmm.
I mean, this was some of the very die-hard opinions in those days. Can a Brahmin, I'm talking very frankly, can a Brahmin go to somebody, I mean, who's of a different caste, and such Brahminical rituals and rites are not performed there? How can they go and then worship him? These were the questions even raised by my uncles. My father had 8 brothers. And a very, I suppose, I don't call it a very rigid one, but truly Brahminical house it was. So that was a question asked of my father. And father, of course, did not bother about it. This was one side where our Brahminical family, etc., was concerned. So once, our mutt, Jir, as we call him, Swami.
The head of the...
The head.
Mutt.
Well, he sent word. They have these divans, as they call them. They send these, their emissaries first, to see if the house is comfortable, because they come with a lot of entourage. Many disciples will come. The house should have a well, because the Swami will bathe only in well water and all his disciples. So when the divan came, at that time, in our sitting room, we had just then gone to Baba, and all that I can say is, there are certain things felt intuitively. You cannot give a rational analysis of it. Father was also enraptured, leave alone mother. And I, at my age, I don't know what touched the inner chords within me. Every time it was a feeling of ecstasy and ecstasy alone. How can this happen? It just can't be accidental. And so the divan came, and then he saw this big and large photograph of Bhagavan in the hall. In the hall it is, because they've got this sort of huge golden, what you would call, mandir-like thing these Swamijis have. They keep it in a big hall, lot of decoration and all that. So the hall was necessary for them. So he looked at this photograph and said, I mean in Kannada, I don't know who will understand it, but it would be nice if I say it in Kannada. Rai re, ee photo yardu? Sir, whose photo is this?
He was addressing your father.
My father. My father said, it is the photo of Sri Satya Sai Baba. Then he said, Rai re, Swamigalu bartare, idana tegedu budi.
What is that?
The Swamiji is coming, remove it.
Mm-hmm.
Father said, nimige yake adu? ಆ ಥರವಲ್ಲ ನೀವು ನನ್ನ ಕೇಳಬಾರದು ನೋಡಿಕೊಳ್ಳೋಣ ಡೋಂಟ್ ಆಸ್ಕ್ ಮೀ ದೀಸ್ ಅನ್ನೆಸೆಸರಿ ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ಸ್
ಯುವರ್ ಫಾದರ್ ಸೆಡ್ ಇಟ್
ಯೆಸ್ ವಾಟ್ ಎಲ್ಸ್ ಫಾದರ್ ಸೆಡ್ ಯು ನೋ ಇಟ್ಸ್ ಸಮಥಿಂಗ್ ಸರ್ ವಾಸ್ ಅ ಡಾಟರ್ ಆಫ್ ಸಚ್ ಅ ಫಾದರ್ ದೆನ್ ದ ಸ್ವಾಮೀಜಿ ಕೇಮ್ ಹಿ ಹ್ಯಾಡ್ ಟು ಪರ್ಫೋರ್ಸ್ ಕೀಪ್ ದ ಹೋಲ್ ಮಂದಿರ್ ಎಟ್ಸೆಟ್ರಾ ರೈಟ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಅ ಭಗವಾನ್ಸ್ ಪಿಕ್ಚರ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಅಫ್ ಕೋರ್ಸ್ ಲವ್ಲಿ ಪೂಜಾ ಇವನ್ ದಟ್ ದೇ ಡೂ ಇಟ್ ಲಾಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಡಿವೋಷನ್ ಅಂಡ್ ದ ಮಾಧ್ವ way of doing it is, in the end, they keep jhula for God. And then they sing these songs, which are lilting and enchanting. They tie the bells, boy disciples, bells around their legs. They keep the thal in their hands.
And they dance.
They jump in ecstasy and sing. It's a very wonderful sight. So after the number of days that he stayed with us, he was about to leave. And then he called my father personally. I was there then. My mother was busy elsewhere. Rai re libanni. Come here. He called my father. Shall I say it in Kannada or just straight off in English?
Whatever way, ma'am, because if you think there is something profound.
He said, you are the son of Beli Srinivasa Rao, a staunch Brahmin of the Madhva cult. How is it? You are going to a daitya. Daitya means a demonic individual.
So that is how he addressed.
Yes, yes. Father, listen to him. And then he put him a question. Father, Swamigale, could you tell me to what caste Sri Rama belonged?
Beautiful.
To what caste did Sri Krishna belong? Who was Shabari, who gave to Sri Rama the fruits she had tasted? Can you give me an answer for that? Rai re, the adhika prasanga, he said. You're talking too much, he said. Then he said, all right, you are the head of our mutt. I will listen to you. But give me just one sort of mantra, wherein I can distinguish adhaitya from divinity.
Okay. He was nonplussed.
Nonplussed. And he said, don't ask me unnecessary questions. So the Swamiji was floored. So to all of us, Swami was God incarnate.
Bhagavan's story is unending.
Unending.
It is infinite in its dimensions. One can hardly exhaust its contents, but stopped we must for now. That is all we have time for, ma'am. But one last question, and you may answer briefly. What is your message to newcomers to the Sai fold?
Have faith, unswerving faith. Stop the vagaries of the mind, which goes into unnecessary analysis, because our minds are very limited. Stop the mind from unnecessary reasoning. Have faith, believe, accept, and you shall see from day to day what bliss, what happiness we derive, and how our character develops, wherein nothing bad can ever affect us. We can just cross over onto the shore of divine bliss.
Ma'am, thank you very much for sharing your very rich experiences with Bhagwan, with the listeners of Radio Sai. It was a privilege having you here on Radio Sai. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rajeshwari. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. What you just heard was a conversation with late Mrs. Jayalakshmi Gopinath. In conversation with her was Dr. Rajeshwari Patel. Dear listener, you could email us your feedback as always to listener@radiosai.org. You can also WhatsApp us to this number, 9393258258. With this, we come to the end of this morning's segment, Divine Glory on Radio Sai. It's me, Team Radio Sai Sunil, signing off, offering this segment at the Divine Lotus Feet of our dear Lord Sai. At 11:30, Bishu will join you with his segment, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. Thank you for staying tuned, and Jai Sai Ram.
Sadguru Brahma Sanatana He Guru Brahma Sanatan He Paramadayaghan Pavan He Paramadayaghan Pavan जदुख विनाशन हे जन्म जदुख विनाशन हे Pavan hai दुख विनाशन हे जगदोधारण कारण हे साई कृष्ण जनार्दन हे
सनातन है।